Adele is on a mission. Her goal? To educate marketers and help them harness the power of buyer personas. Just type in buyer persona on Amazon and you'll find out that she literally wrote the book, telling how to gain and use insights about buying decisions. Her book is titled Buying Personas, How to Gain Insight into Your Customers' Expectations, Align Your Marketing Strategies, and Win More Business. Designed and written to help you see your offerings through the eyes of buyers and become more effective at marketing. Adele is the founder of the Buyer Persona Institute that can be found at buyerpersona.com, a great source of studies and resources to help you on the journey of understanding your target audience. In this podcast, Adele reveals four unique insights. One, how to look beyond the facts and gain buying insights. Two, how you're annoying your leads and how to be helpful instead. Three, the key question you have to ask before creating any content. And last but not least, ways to conduct discovery interviews and get the initial intel you need.
Where to begin? You know, the key thing for, because we're interviewing buyers every single day, we have probably 24 interviews going on today with buyers, and every single one of the buyers is frustrated with their inability to quickly get the information they need to make an informed buying decision. And it doesn't matter whether they're engaged with the marketing content or the salespeople. We hear repeatedly, you know, people aren't prepared to talk about what matters to the buyer. We're in there and we go in and we have, you know, the company prepared story to present, but we really haven't built that story from a clear understanding of what the buyers want to hear. And that's what our work is meant to resolve. Because people have weird ideas about buyer personas, like we're just going to get a name and a picture and we're going to put it on the wall and everybody's going to have empathy with the buyer. We're all going to feel good about that. That's really not our thinking about buyer personas at all. We want, when we do the research or when people engage in our approach to the research, they're learning how to interview buyers about a buying decision and to get what we call buying insights. So buying, not buyer, right? And it's a very, it's an important distinction because when we get buying insights, we get the kind of considerations and expectations that buyers have that factor into every engagement, every encounter we have with the buyer, whether it's, you know, an initial marketing encounter or whether it's a sales call later on. Yeah, it is. So we want to know who the buyer is, but that's a small part of the buyer persona. We also want to know how, when, and why they make the decision to solve the problem that we solve for them. And so the how, when, and why is the buying insight, and the who is the buyer insight. And together, they form a complete picture so that they could really prepare us to meet the buyers where they are and to deal with them in their terms rather than our terms, which is what buyers are so upset about. It's why the buyers are increasingly saying, I'm going to avoid talking to you and engaging with you for as long as I can because you're not very helpful to me. And, you know, they're not really saying that out loud to us, but we're seeing that in the data and that buyers are resisting the sales encounters and the marketing encounters for as long as possible. It's because we're not helping. We're not talking to them about what matters to them. Mm-hmm. Right? Right. Well, so it depends on, we don't call it B2B versus B2C. We call it the level of consideration a buyer gives the decision. So I don't know, have you recently been engaged in a long search for something that was hard to find? Really? You have, right? Okay. So you've got something in your mind. Now I want you to think about what you did. And I want you to think about all the steps you took and all the encounters you had and how very different that is than walking into the grocery store and buying the same bread you buy every week or the same, you know, milk you buy every week. And it's a very different kind of buying process. So first of all, I want to get people to think about, because this was, let's say this was a consumer purchase. And I want people to think about the fact that there's a difference in the way we need to engage with our buyers, depending on whether how much consideration they're giving the buying decision. And that for a decision where buyers spend hours, weeks, or months doing that, or even years for some of our clients, looking for something that's a perfect fit for their needs, search is this big in the overall aspect of everything that goes on. On the other hand, if I know exactly what I need, you know, I want to buy the same vitamins that I bought last month and I buy them online, I go and I type it in search and maybe I do a search on price and I buy it, I order it, it's over. So, you know, I always want to make that distinction in these interviews, because some of the people you're talking to are engaged in very long, complex sales cycles where there's multiple buyers involved. And some are engaged in, you know, things like which bakery do I go to buy my bread, or which restaurant do I go to? And that's a different kind of consideration process. So I think when search is being talked about, like, okay, we're just going to look at our search data and that's going to give us our buyer persona, or we're going to look at what's happening in our website and that's going to give us our buyer persona. It depends a lot on how much offline work your buyer is doing to really make that the crux of that decision. And when we talk to B2B buyers, if they go use search at all, it's mostly like, oh yeah. And we also went out, we did a little search. But I have never yet interviewed someone ever, and we've done thousands of interviews, who was engaged in a complex buying decision, who told me that the vendor that they selected was initially discovered through search. Not once. It's sort of upsetting, right? But that's part of why, you know, I'm talking about this and writing about it, is because we've sort of collapsed these thoughts. And, you know, it's really important to make these distinctions around where is our buyer's mind? What are they thinking about as they go through a buying decision? It's a very different thing than just, you know, grouping you and me because we happen to both be the same age and, you know, we both work from home, or we both, whatever we have in common, we still, what buying decisions we're emphasizing in our lives right now and the process we go through might differ dramatically, have nothing to do with our demographics. Yeah. And is your buyer, the other one is market maturity. I mean, is this a product like that I know a lot about as a buyer because I'm on my fifth version of CRM and now I'm looking to improve it? Or is it something like around predictive analytics where I'm doing something that's much more leading edge and I'm trying to really do a lot of research about that? And so, you know, this sort of one size fits all idea that we're just going to go look at our online data or search and we're going to build our buyer persona is just ridiculous. And it's appealing because it's easy. But, you know, so my thinking is that if we're going to go to the trouble to do buyer personas, they ought to give us a competitive advantage. They ought to tell us something that's not obvious that our competitors don't know, that if we know that, we'll change the game and allow us to be truly more effective than anyone else. And so we're looking for insight. And that's why we call it the five rings of buying insight. We're looking for insight. We're looking for something that's an aha moment. You know, we use the word insight kind of casually. But if you look at what the word insight means, it's really a like game changer. And so we aren't going to get this by just taking it, what we know, and putting it into a new template, or just mining data from our search, from our online data. We have to really go a little bit outside the box and start to think about what do we really need to know about how, why, and when our buyers make the decisions we want to influence. And it's frustrating. In hindsight, you go, why did I have to do that? And I think that the internet has spoiled us, but we don't expect to have to do that. And so think about that. If your buyer is like that, then think about being the company that has understood that buyer's buying experience so well, understood what they were thinking about, that you can now be there with a swipe right, swipe left. So you can be there instantly. Isn't that a source of competitive advantage? And the other thing that's really interesting about that, those long searches for the right solution, price is a relatively small aspect. At the end of the day, exactly. And it's not like we can't be outrageous. We do, it has to be affordable for us in our budget. But at the end of the day, buyers that invest in these, important decisions, these high consideration decisions, prices, a minor aspect of this. So now we don't have to be the low priced option. It's huge. First of all, we really ought to try to find out whether the sales pipeline matches the buyer journey at all. And, what's this is actually, and marketing automation is a part of this. So, everybody has this idea that there's this very linear process that people go through, and sales pipelines always look like that. I think that what we have now realized, those of us that are investing a lot of time in understanding the buying experience, is that the purpose of the sales pipeline ought to be to report to management about which deals are going to be likely to close in the next few months. And that trying to sort of say, and so we're really looking at, how many deals do we have that, and what is their likely close date? And that's a sales pipeline. A buyer's journey is fascinating because it isn't linear at all. Buyers go through fundamentally the same kinds of steps. In other words, anybody who's buying a swimming pool goes through kind of the same kinds of decision criteria and issues to buy a swimming pool, but they don't go through them in the same order. And so this sort of theory that we're going to have a marketing automation solution and it's going to say, well, on the first visit, you get this, and on the second visit, you get this, and on the third encounter, you get that. It's really bogus. It's not aligned with what the buyers want. And so where we need to get to, and I've just done a whole thing about personalized marketing, is right now, personalized marketing, we know just enough about the buyer to be completely annoying. And the same thing's true about marketing automation. We know we're at a level of sophistication with that we can now be even more efficient at being annoying. And if you've ever been online and searched for something and bought it and for the next week had an ad for that same thing, or for me, I'm searching for different clients that we're doing business with, and for a week I'll get their ads. And so we know just enough to be perfectly annoying. I mean, I see a future where we actually use these tools to be helpful to buyers. And we're not there. We've got to be really careful right now, because we're so likely to just irritate everybody to death that, you know, some major, I don't know whether the government comes in or somebody comes in, like do not call us, and just shuts us all down. And we need to show some restraint around this, and we need to say, our question has to be all the time when we're making decisions, whether they're marketing decisions or sales decisions, do we know enough about our buyer to ensure that this engagement is helpful? And what's the content of a helpful engagement with our buyer? I don't care if you're on Pinterest or YouTube or they're on your website, or whether it's a white paper or a data sheet. What I care about is the data. Is the content helpful? Does it answer your buyer's questions? And we've got to be asking that more. And telling me who you are doesn't tell me how to do that. I have to get insight into your buying decision before I can be helpful to you. Yes. Yeah, they can. But it takes a first step. I just read an article for Brand Quarterly magazine, which the title was, "There's Nothing Automatic About Automation." And it was all about the things we need to do before we do automation. So we're automating, we're taking our 368 pieces of content, and we're just plugging them into this marketing automation machine, and we're just sort of assigning them to these, you know, made up stages in the buying process. And we've got names for Suzy Q and, you know, Smart Sam, and we've given those names, and we're feeling good about ourselves because it feels like what we're seeking is control, right? We're seeking control. And that's a worthy objective, but we've got to stop and realize the buyer's in control. We're not in control. And it's kind of like cleaning. If I'm really depressed, I'll go clean a drawer because it makes me feel better. And I think there's this sort of sense of, we're not doing this right. If we just clean this out and we get it organized, we'll have more control, and it's not working. So what do we have to do? We have to first understand what our buyers really want to know about. And then we need to rewrite the book on the way we do messaging and build our content to give our buyers access to the real information that's helpful to them, and to put that into our marketing automation engine, and not we are the world's leading provider of flexible, scalable, compatible, interoperable, market leading, you know, double neutral BS, because that's what we're doing. Yeah. It's because we've reverse engineered all of our content. We've taken everything we do And we've looked at it and we said, well, we can solve this and this and this. And then we reverse engineer the message. We go out and we say, so now our buyers need to get educated that we can do this and this and this. And instead of, if we didn't reverse engineer, but if we engineered it with from the buyer's perspective, then we'd go interview buyers to find out where they are, what matters to them. And then we'd build that path for them. So, you know, we really live in a buyer's world, and we're acting as if we live in a seller's world.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, I don't think the internet the internet's been around since the 80s, right? I mean, when did Netscape launch the browser, right? And so, boy, we're really dating ourselves here, Mary Lou, but we earned those wrinkles. And so, but the fact is that it's really that everything that's been built around the internet in terms of expectations that buyers have, just like we were talking about a few minutes ago, that people wanted to be at their fingertips, and it's not. And so now, I don't know if you saw the Gartner study. I wrote a blog post about it. That Gartner says they did a study worldwide of B2B buyers, and they found that through the entire buyer's journey, through every phase that buyers go through, they're only engaged with either our salespeople or our marketing content for 32% of that journey. 68% of the time, they're not even talking to us or looking at anything we wrote. And what's really scary about that is that's when they're deciding who's in their consideration set. That's when they're deciding, is this a problem I care about solving? And, you know, I think there's one way we could look at this like, oh my gosh, we're sunk. I say no, I say shame on us. The reason that they're turning elsewhere is because we're not doing a good enough job of being helpful to them.
Yes.
Yeah. There you go. You know, we did, I don't know how many hundred buyer personas last year. The only thing that every single one of us has in common is every single buyer starts with their peers. And, you know, so this is, you know, what concerns me is I've been in sales and marketing for more than 30 years, not saying how long exactly. And, you know, I see us very gradually losing control over our ability to influence the buying decision. And that's what we're here for. I mean, that's why our companies hire us, is, you know, to influence a buying decision. And if we can't do that, and it's happening, and the buyers are saying enough. And it's like, we figured out how to buy cars essentially without having to talk to the car salespeople. And we have, you know, we've essentially made our decision before we ever show up in the car lot. And so we know what price we're going to pay, and we know what car we want. And, you know, the rest of it's kind of, you know, just sort of, we got to show up to buy it, to pick it up. The last car I bought, the last time I bought a car, I was literally at the dealership for less than an hour. I phoned the person I had, and I said, this is the car I want, and I'll be there in an hour, and I want to sign the paperwork and be out of there in an hour. And I was. And what if that happens across all high, cars should be a high consideration buying decision. They are. But it's all occurring where it's hard to watch. Now, big data and everything that's going on around that promises us to allow us to get inside that as long as the buyer is online. But in most high consideration buying decisions, including yours, you know, the key influence point didn't occur online. You picked up a telephone, this unbelievable instrument, and just phoned someone. No digital footprint. Now let's consider this. What if the suggestion he made you wasn't the very, I'm not trying to freak you out, Mary Lou, but what if there were other even better options that you didn't learn about? See? Because by this time you're just exhausted and frustrated. And so, like I said, we're losing the ability to influence the outcome of the buying decision. And the buyers, and this is, you know, the where we get a little altruistic, maybe it sounds like, but we're also not serving the buyers because we're not giving them the benefit of knowing that we really do have a better option for them. And so this is, you know, I think we've got a win-win situation here. We're taking shortcuts that are because it's new muscles we have to learn to exercise to think this way and work this way as companies. And buyer personas, by and large, aren't getting people there. And it's because they're not doing it right. And so we're seeing this proliferation. I mean, my gosh, we're inundated with people saying we need buyer personas. And, you know, if you go back, I started my blog, the Buyer Persona Blog, in 2006. When I did, buying buyerpersona.com was the easiest thing in the world. Right now, you couldn't get it for love nor money. And, you know, nobody, I remember looking at Google Analytics or whatever they had in the day to see how much traffic there was around buyer personas. Zippo, none. And now it's all over the map. It's crazy. But people are going to, you know, they're taking the fewest possible steps. Say, okay, we've got buyer personas. Yes, but do you have buying insight? Do you know how to influence that buying decision for that buyer and to be helpful to your buyer? Answer is no. So we're starting to see this generation. First of all, I wrote the book to try to get people not to give up on buyer personas because I said, if it keeps going this way, people are going to pretty soon say, well, we tried buyer personas and didn't work. They're a waste of time. Well, that's really bad for me. So what happens to the value of my domain at then? You know, buyerpersona.com will be available for a nickel. So I said, I got to really take at least write it all down. Doesn't mean people are going to read it. Doesn't mean they're going to do it. Doesn't mean they're going to hire us to do it. But at least I will have said it. It'll be out there. This is what you need to do to get buying insight and not just to know who your buyer is. It's not enough. Cleaning in's good. So the first thing is this is a very specialized kind of interview. So you can't do surveys, you can't do focus groups, and you don't need a discussion guide. The hardest part of this process for people to get, and it's a simple idea, is that you want to get people on the phone who have recently solved the problem that you solve for your clients. And you want to have them walk you through every step of their story. You know, I'd love to interview you about that buying decision we were just talking about. And I could get inside, you know, tell me what happened, Mary Lou, on the day that you decided that you needed to go solve this problem. And then you could probably walk me through, you know, and I can see it in your eyes. We talked about it. You know, there's angst around this. And, you know, I'm going to get to the emotional highs and lows of this experience and everything you tried and everything that didn't work. And what I'm gleaning from that is I'm starting to get a picture of what you, at least one person, not a persona, but what one person is doing and thinking about as they're in that decision cycle and all the criteria they had to solve this problem. And I'm going to do that a number of times. Surprisingly, you don't have to have a whole bunch of interviews to do this. This is qualitative research, and we're in a discovery mode. And we generally find that after about 10 interviews, we don't learn anything new after that about that. As long as we segment the market correctly, that's kind of a longer conversation. And then you're going to look for patterns. And we've created a sort of a template for that. We have 5 insights we're looking for. And we call them the 5 rings of buying insight. And we're going to go and look at every interview And we're going to look for patterns and trends. So this is all unstructured data. We've recorded the interviews. We've had them transcribed. And now we're going to look for what did Mary Lou say and what did Joe say and what did Suzanne say with respect to what triggered their search. We call that the priority initiative insight. And then what were the outcomes that they all wanted? We call that success factors. What were their barriers? What sort of were the obstacles they faced? We call that the perceived barriers insight. What did they think about different approaches that didn't fit our solution? And the fourth insight is decision criteria. We look at all the qualities or attributes of the services or products you cared about as you went through that assessment. And then the fifth insight is the buyer's journey. We look at everything. We write down, these are all the places she went. These are all the people she talked to. This is everything she did. And all the other, if there were other people involved, maybe your husband got involved or a business colleague, then we record all that in the buyer's journey. And then we take verbatim quotes from the interviews. We put those in the persona so that everybody who's looking at that persona gets a whole picture of that story that is your story about the buying insights, the buying decision. Yeah. Well, unless we were going to spend 4 hours on this call, I can't give you enough detail, which is why I wrote the book. So, you know, any bookstore, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, the book's called Buyer Personas. It's easy to find. You can go to our website at buyerpersona.com and we'll take you there. And there's even a preview of the first three chapters of the book available, a PDF on our website. So you can go to buyerpersona.com and just look at the first three chapters, see if this really fits your goals. And then it's because there's a lot to learn about finding the right people to interview, who you want to interview, getting them to agree to talk to you, and then conducting that interview. So because whatever answer they give you first to any question isn't going to be an insight, you have to learn how to ask good probing follow-up questions, and then you know, building the persona from that. And then even just as important is now if the book goes into how do you build your content strategies around what you learned. So I decided, a lot of people in business write a book that says you really need to do this. This is a great idea. And here's all these case studies. I didn't do that. I wrote down everything I know after 30 years of doing this about how to find the people to interview and do this. I mean, we disclosed every secret we have about that in the book and to make it. Yeah, I wrote for the person who doesn't know how to do this. We also, for people who hate to read, we have an online workshop that people can sign up for so they can listen. So it's called the Buyer Persona Masterclass. And so it's only 2 hours and you can just go put in your credit card and watch it at your leisure. I learned my persona. Some people like to read and some people like to listen and watch. And so we have that option for people who would rather kind of do it in 2 hours. Unfortunately, Wiley hasn't published an audio version of my book. And so this is kind of the audio version. And then if you sign up for the masterclass, you get a 90-minute session that I do every month. And you can attend and ask questions about your specific situation. And I'm having trouble with this. And what do I do about that? And so forth. Yes. Yeah, reading the book is not going to get you. Buying the book is useless. Reading the book is useless. You actually have to do it. It's just about how to really do the interviews and not as much about how to use the interviews. So, yeah, I'd say it's condensed. And then, of course, there's, you know, most of our business is people hiring us to do it. They just say, we just, yeah. Yeah. You know, I was a sales rep for about a whole year of my career back in the 80s. I sold Wang computers, if you want to go back that far. And then I ran sales for 4 years. And the five rings of buying insight are derived from the things that I tried to learn about one account at a time. Every time I go in, I try to do discovery. Now, this was the 80s. This was back what we were talking about. People didn't have a chance to just go online and find out their options. So they'd be stuck talking to me, and I'd go in and I'd get all this information from them. And, you know, the first year I was a rep, I was 400% a quota because I really focused on learning what they wanted and then presenting my solution as a perfect fit for their needs. So buyer personas are just a tool to help us do that for a market full of buyers. You know, one, we can do this one account at a time if we're really good and we have the opportunity to get into the consideration set for every deal and go in and do that discovery. But if we are trying to scale our business and get into more deals and or we just don't have a chance to do that discovery to influence every deal, then buyer personas gives us a sense of how a market full of buyers thinks about those five things. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, titles are a mess. And in the olden days, you could call the company's receptionist and say, I want to talk to the IT director, and they'd put you through. Wasn't that cool? Different. We had a different set of challenges, but oh, there you go. Yeah, I did Intel's ISDN launch. That's so funny that you did. So there you go. Yeah. In the earthquakes, it was the wiring that held them up, right? Yes. Yes. And the more we understand, I mean, you got that insight around the asbestos, and they just wanted you to put a digital phone on it. That's really an insight, right? And so if you had that at the level of the market, none of your competitors knew that, then you could exploit that in not just for those five accounts, but across all your marketing and in your website and all your engagement. And that's the kind of thing. I mean, salespeople intuitively hunt out and seek that sort of, you know, what button do we have to push to get the buyer to react? And good salespeople are really good listeners, and they're really good at figuring that out one account at a time, but it doesn't scale. And it certainly doesn't solve the problem called marketing's giving us crummy leads, and you know, we're not the marketing content, the sales tools I'm getting are filled with dribble, and I don't even feel like I can give those to my prospect, or when I do give it to them, they don't read it. And so that's really what we're trying to do with personas. We're trying to get that insight at the level of the market full of buyers. Thank you, Mary Lou. Me too. Yeah. Let me think about that. How can you ask the question so that I can give you this answer? So I would phrase it this way. I would say, you know, I've been selling this for a while. I really understand. I meet with a lot of buyers every time, every day. I think I understand my buyer pretty well. What's going to be different if I go and build a persona? How about that? Does that work for you? Because, I mean, you know that's true, right? Okay. And people are thinking that. I mean, it's one of the things salespeople think, you know, why can't we just, you know, why do we need to do this? I know the people, I meet with them every day. Why don't you ask them that? Yeah. And that's such a common question, Mary Lou. And the fact is, salespeople are really good about knowing one account at a time. But here, there's really several reasons that they don't really get as much information as we do from these interviews. And one is that salespeople aren't patterns and trends people. They're really looking for one deal at a time. And what do they see? What's happening in that deal? Get micro-focused on that. The other thing is that buyers are hiding information from the salespeople. They simply don't share everything that's happening in their organization or all the factors that are affecting the buying decision while it's going on. They're hiding information from you that they won't disclose later on. We also talked about the fact that the buyers aren't even engaged with you for much of the buying decision. So you're getting in late and you're never talking to buyers who don't consider you. So you're kind of, it's almost like this self-fulfilling prophecy where you keep selling to the same type of buyer, the same thing, because that's what's being reinforced for you every day. What you're missing is the ability to break out of that and go into buyers that aren't considering you, and that you know, people in the organization that are beginning to influence the outcome that you don't ever get to talk to, because you're just sort of, it's like this virtuous circle where, you know, what you're doing well reinforces continuing doing that. What we want to look at is what's happening in the market, what's happening with all these other buyers, and how could you just upend, you know, just break out of that mode and get into some role that would radically change your ability to win more business. That's the objective. Yeah. Well, that's a subtitle for my book. So it's Buyer Personas. You know, how to gain insight into your customers' expectations, align your marketing strategies, and win more business. So and the reason I wrote the book is because people are building buyer personas. They're not winning more business as a result of that. And that has got to change. You know? And with once you get that buying insight, you can actually use that to win more business. BuyerPersona.com. I'm also on Twitter at BuyerPersona. And on Facebook at / Buyer Persona. So it's pretty hard to lose me. Thank you. Thanks, Mary Lou.